Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world thinking about globe life, globe liberty, and the pursuit of globe happiness. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and those are our unalienable rights.
I'm excited to hear your globe life field review. I know you did tweet some positivity, but I'm excited to dig into that. Jake, the World Series starts tonight. It's Friday. It's October 27th. The Arizona Diamondbacks are actually going to be playing in the World Series against the Texas Rangers. Huh. So I don't know. I know you were at the workout day yesterday, but like that was not like some sort of distraction. Like those are the teams that are going to be in the World Series. I hope you know.
And it's like the Super Bowl of baseball, Jordan.
It's just like that. Yeah. Thankfully, we don't have to wait, you know, 2 whole weeks for this World Series to begin. Just 2 whole days after both LCSs win 7 games. And tonight, Zach Gallen will take on Nasty Nate Eovaldi in Game 1 at Globe Life Field. First of all, Jake, as we approach this final series of the 2023 season, how are you? How are you, my friend? I understand that you did actually get some sleep last night. I know that's been at a minimum recently for you due to some travel and some unlucky, flight delays and all kinds of nonsense. Of course, we've had a lot of late night writing for both of us. How are you doing? You doing all right?
I'm doing okay. Caught a Z or two. The schedule of covering the postseason involves a lot of late nights and then sleeping in. However, I don't think that there are many other people that are doing early morning podcasts in addition to that. And that might be the reason for my general exhaustion. Now, it's hard to complain when Ken Rosenthal is walking out here and doing sideline every day and then somehow finding time to write on The Athletic. He is a machine. I gained so much respect for that gentleman.
Let alone talk to all the people Ken Rosenthal's probably talking to all the time.
It's incredible. He's a force, a machine. Yes. But I'm doing good. My spirits are high, and hopefully the Texas Rangers can take them higher. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How much Creed did you hear yesterday as we transition to your Globe Life Field review before we get into sort of our big picture World Series thoughts? If you haven't listened to our show we did yesterday, Thursday, that was kind of the nitty gritty position by position, how we're kind of feeling, you know, tail of the tape between these two teams. We didn't actually offer our predictions for the series. I guess we'll do that at the end of this episode, but this is going to be a little bit more narrative focused, some of the individual storylines that we're most intrigued by. But before we get to that, did you hear any Creed yesterday, Thursday? Did you, how was your experience there at the ballpark?
I did not hear any Creed coming from the ballpark speakers. However, from my own personal headphones.
That's true. You were opting into it. It was not forced upon you by the Globe Life speakers. Okay.
My arms were wide open. Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good. And it seems that you're with arms wide open, you embraced this weird looking baseball stadium. One of the newest ones, I guess is it newer than Atlanta? One of the newest ones that we have. And from the outside, literally from the outside, and as an outsider who's only seen it on TV, I have some perception of it. But it does seem like you had a positive experience once you got inside. And a lot of people responding to you were like, yeah, like I actually kind of like this ballpark. So give us the reaction. I know your Chase Field experience was certainly not as favorable, but I think we can get into why that might have been. So what about Globe Life Field? Do you like it? How we feel? I know you haven't seen a game there yet, but what do you think?
Surprisingly liked it. It is a good lesson about how to treat people, Jordan. Mm. From the outside, horrendously ugly. Really?
Undeniably. I don't think anybody is defending that.
Like, uglier from the outside than I could have imagined. It is made worse by the fact that the old ballpark, which looks nice from the outside, is just still standing next door as a testament to what stadiums can look like. They don't need to look like Costco's or grills or warehouses from the outside. However, you get to know the stadium a little bit. You get in on the inside. And it's nice. It is a much brighter version of Chase Field. And that is warping my opinion of it, considering I just went to Chase. It is a newer, updated, colder version of Chase Field. And I liked it quite a bit. It feels very big and not in an overwhelming way. It feels spacious. Doesn't feel cramped like some dome stadiums do. And I liked it.
I would also imagine, again, if we are contrasting with Chase Field, you'd sort of mentioned that Chase Field sort of felt outdated. And I would imagine that going from that, not that Chase Field is 100 years old, but again, it's kind of in that weird sweet spot, or I guess the opposite of a sweet spot, where it's like too old to feel fresh, but not old enough to have charm. And that's kind of where that stadium falls. Whereas Texas is as fresh as can be. It's brand spanking new and everything feels very, I'm sure, clean and you know, brand new and all that stuff. I'm sure that helps as well. Now, a lot of talk about the press box being really high up. It seemed like the picture you tweeted was not from that angle. But will you be sitting up there for the game, or are you going to be in the Ox box? What's the situation?
I think I'll be in the main press box, but it is next to the Ox box.
Oh, okay.
The press box is incredibly high up. It is a very odd angle to watch the game. But that's my problem. I don't think that should be a referendum on the entire stadium.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. No, no one generally cares. I just know that's a talking point for many of our fellow media folk. There are certain press boxes that are notoriously high up, and I understand this might be appropriately the highest.
Can
now
you
has
take
more meeting than ever before?
Can you take the press box higher? But as a whole, I liked it a lot more than I thought I did. We'll see how it is with the game. It is ugly. It is an ugly looking place from the outside, very practical, which I guess is the city of Dallas.
There you go. So that is a whole other, we don't need to review the entire DFW Metroplex on this episode. We're going to stick to the baseball here. And Jake, let us begin to open this discussion a little bit more broadly, because again, on yesterday's show, we talked about pretty much all of the main players and characters from a how good are they at baseball standpoint. But now we can open it up to something more. So what are some, as you were around yesterday, I don't know if we can also just start with some of your takeaways from being around these two teams yesterday, if you want to start there. But then I just wanted to kind of open it up to just the big picture thoughts, the storylines that you're most intrigued by. I wrote a piece at Fox Sports today that we kind of deemed legacy rankings. I mean, the ranking's a little bit dramatic, but just think about eight people in this series who, if they win this World Series, like, will have a very big impact on, I think, the way that we think about them. So we can get it to some of those people. But after the workout day, being around these two teams, what did you learn yesterday? What are you thinking about?
What did I learn yesterday? What am I thinking about? Couple little snippets. Geraldo Perdomo was on the Ox.
On the Ox, okay.
So, you know, when the road team takes BP and the home team doesn't let them use the speakers, so they just have to use their own enormous boombox. So that was Geraldo Perdomo's responsibility yesterday, the 24-year-old shortstop, which I liked. I liked that he was the one who wheeled out the boombox. You know, I've been around the Diamondbacks, I guess, for the last week and a half. Doing Rangers media was fun. Getting a sense for, like, I'm writing something about Nathaniel Lowe, and everyone really likes that guy and thinks he's a bit of an odd duck in a positive way. That was fun to kind of get a sense for that. But no major takeaways, to be honest with you, from these two teams in the last day. Talked to Austin Hedges for a while, who is just the Garrett Stubbs, but more serious for the Texas Rangers, as the catcher with there for solely the vibes. But besides that, no, nothing too crazy, Jordan.
All right. So then, regardless of your experience yesterday, who are some people that you are thinking about the most? I mean, again, what I wrote on Fox today, I think that the manager contrast here is a fascinating one. You know, Bruce Bochy has nothing to prove. He was already an all-time great when he retired after 2019. And for him to come back and even make it to this point in his first year has elevated him, or has the potential to elevate him to an even higher circle, trying to become just the sixth manager ever to win four World Series. He is, I think, the only manager ever to win the LCS with three different teams. That is certainly an achievement. And then also, just like, people already love the guy. So it's like everyone was rooting for him to accomplish this. And I think also when you contrast it with Dusty, when he took over the Astros, everybody loved Dusty, but not necessarily everybody was rooting for him to succeed with the Astros. It was very much like, I love Dusty, but oh, I don't want to see the Astros succeed in the wake of this scandal. Whereas with Bochy, I mean, it's, you know, unimpeachable. I mean, everybody is rooting for him to get this done. Not that he needs to, but he really has impressed me. And it would be a hell of a story if he can get it done.
Baseball players think that they are very smart. They think that they are right all the time. And what that means is ball players often second guess decisions that their managers make. We don't see that on the public side a lot, because when they're asked questions by the media, they play nice and they say, oh, well, you know, that's just how it goes. But you ask guys off the record, like, there is doubt a lot. With the sense I got yesterday talking to the Rangers is that Bruce Bochy, it doesn't actually matter what decisions he's making, that he is the person pressing the buttons gives so much conviction to the players and the Rangers. Because yeah. What are you going to do? Doubt the guy with three rings? Like, yeah, sometimes he'll make a weird, like, bringing in Aroldis Chapman in a big spot. It's like, well, it's Bruce Bochy.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously we've seen it work enough this time. I do just love that it was exactly the way we felt for the first month watching the Rangers in the regular season, where it was just like, there's some weird things about this team, but when they pan over and it's him instead of some of the other managers they've had recently, I'm like, oh, like, I'm chilling. Like, I feel good. And the players have essentially directly echoed that exact sentiment over and over and over. And so I do kind of love and have been impressed that it has gone exactly as you could have possibly hoped.
On the other side, Torrey Lovello, who, by the way, you know Torrey is short for Salvatore?
Yes, we've not talked about that enough. I learned that, I think, at some point during this regular season.
Yeah, I just won't call him Sal. That's just, I think that's great. His tact with the Diamondbacks this October is very impressive. He has gotten this team to believe in itself, right? Now, every time that they win another game, they believe in themselves more, and I could get them to do that believing if they kept beating the Phillies and the Dodgers and the Brewers,
sure,
whatever.
Sure, sure.
But when it feels to me like he shows up every day with another piece of fake bulletin board material and gets his boys riled up, and it works every time. Torrey Lovello is the perfect manager for this Diamondbacks team.
Yeah, but let's remember, it was as recently as August that people were like, he's not the guy. Like, when they were collapsing right after the deadline, because remember, he was already a guy that managed a team that lost 110 games. This is a guy who, in his first year in 2017, wins NL Manager of the Year because they had a bounce back after losing 93 games. They win 93. They go to the playoffs in 2017. And then since then, he's just kind of been floating around mediocrity. And generally, those are the kinds of managers that get phased out, especially when you either lose 100 games or you have a situation like this season where you totally collapse. But I think what has been made clear in the reporting around everything about the kind of the higher levels of this organization, Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello are as tight as can be. These are guys that worked together back to their days with Boston. And that made a huge difference, that like Hazen was not going to turn on Torrey at any point, no matter what this season. And that has clearly paid off. I think to your point, it's a combination of the motivation that he's clearly able to, everyone loves playing for him, whatever. And I think he's also like generally pressed the right buttons. I mean, managing this bullpen in multiple bullpen games has been really impressive. Of course, the players have had to execute, but that combined with being willing to shake up the lineup when the players are kind of telling you that you should has also been impressive. And it's just worked to this degree. And ultimately, any underdog story of this level is going to be largely attributed to the manager. And I think he's earned that. And if they can complete it, it will be a legendary manager performance. Like, that is undeniable. I mean, it already is. But if they actually pull this off, he will be as secure as can be for a long time.
And Torrey's gotten a lot of credit for his bullpen management, as he should. But it's a great reminder that a manager's bullpen management is only as good as the bullpen, right? And every button that he's pressed in the later innings has been spectacular. These guys have not biffed it once, right? Thompson yeeted that one ball to the backstop in game three against the Phillies. But besides that, these guys have been outrageously good. And I think that is a huge part of understanding the World Series here.
And that's also why one of the guys I highlighted in my piece for Fox is Brent Strom. I don't know how much you've gotten to talk to people about him. I remember interviewing Zach Gallen at the beginning of the 2022 season about him working with him, because that was just at the very early stages of Brent Strom's, you know, tenure with the D-backs. I mean, the dude's 75. He's been the oldest manager or been the oldest pitching coach in baseball, I think, 6 years running now. And he's also clearly so in charge of all of the pitching decisions, which maybe you could say that about all pitching coaches, but whenever they show him on TV in the dugout, like, or whenever there's like a moment where it's like, oh, are they going to take the starter out here? Or, oh, are they going to decide to pitch to him here? It's always very clear that Strom is in full control. And that is both impressive and also, I think, speaks to how much trust they have in him. And the reason why everybody loves him so much is because he's 75 and he's able to communicate in a way that is effective with modern pitchers while also being able to, in the way that I'm sure Dusty Baker can, and I'm sure Bochy to some degree, be like, hey, here's an experience I had in the 60s that actually relates to 2023. And that is a valuable thing if you are able to combine it.
He is older, Brent Strom, than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 different franchises.
Okay. That's, I was like, where, what are we going for here? But yeah, he's an elderly gentleman, and he is sharp as ever. And to see him get to win a World Series, because remember, he leaves the Astros after they lose in 2021. And so he only has that 2017 title that he deserves a lot of credit for, because if we remember, like, so much of the pitching, you know, in Houston Dynasty can be attributed to him. Nobody gives a shit because it's like, oh, sorry, you cheated and I hate all these hitters. But so much of their success, you think about guys like Charlie Morton, you think about guys like Dallas Keuchel and McCullers and all these guys, not to mention what Gerrit Cole, you know, kind of became when he went there. All these things he had a huge part of. And now it's like to see him do it with this group of pitchers is honestly even more fun and more exciting. So Strom is certainly someone else I'm thinking about.
Speaking of the 2017 and 2020 World Series, do you remember the quote I had in a Corey Seager feature I wrote earlier this year?
I remember that it was a good feature, but help me out. What was it?
Quote, he wants to win a real World Series, and he wants to do it over and over and over and over again.
Yes. So that is another one. Corey Seager is in an interesting spot here. I think when we think about Corey Seager in the postseason, we think about 2020, obviously, because it's one of the great runs we've ever seen. We think about how that was in Globe Life Field, where he now calls his home ballpark and will for the next decade. But let's also remember that Corey Seager was in the postseason a lot with the Dodgers beyond 2020 and was not that good. He was like fine at best. Lot of chances to get the World Series. He missed a World Series because he was injured, right? Like, I think all of that kind of contributes to the fact that he's most closely associated to the bubble World Series, which I still take fairly seriously. I still find very impressive in its own way, but I can also see where he's coming from, where he not only wants to win a real one, he's the guy now. He is indisputably the guy now, and it has been brought in to be the guy, and for him to be this good with the Rangers is like, not just impressive, but it's encouraging. He's been able to live up to all that hype and all that money.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see how he goes this week. He has been outstanding this go-round in October. I mean, his career October OPS is 837, which is very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. But he was pretty bad before that 2020 World Series. So it's not as if he has to prove anything, but it's clear that he has to prove something to himself. I'm excited to see if he smiles if he wins the World Series. Speaking of guys who don't smile all that often, Corbin Carroll. Very serious young gent, very cerebral guy, very thoughtful. I asked him a question a couple days ago. I said, what is different about the postseason than you expected? I'm sure you had ideas about what this would be like and how does it compare? And he said, can you give me a minute or two to think about that? And I was like, yeah. And we just stood there in silence for like a minute while he just clearly thought it through. It's very interesting and unique, right? Most guys will just bullshit you if they have nothing to say.
This was also the guy who dropped the word proprioception in a press conference recently, which is great, and not a word that a lot of people know or would ever hear coming out of a baseball player's mouth. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, very intense, very thoughtful, very like, and I think what comes with that is not at all being overwhelmed or being too, you know, happy-go-lucky about anything. You saw when he was struggling during the NLCS, he also had some quotes being like, I am not good enough right now. Like, this is not okay. And for a 23-year-old to recognize that and understand that he is the best player. You know, it's one thing for some of these other rookies like Evan Carter, Josh Young. Like, those guys are great, very talented, important players for their team. It's not all about them. It's not all about them. It is all about Corbin Carroll. And he's recognized that and he's embraced that.
He's the second best player on the field in this World Series. Corey Seager's one. He's two. Like, we can talk about Evan Carter and Josh Young and all these other rookies and even Gabby Moreno. Mm-hmm. he was like a 5-win player this year. Like, he's an MVP candidate right now, moving forward. He's 23. He is it right now. It's not what will he be in 2 years. He is it, one of the best players in baseball right now, full stop. And so he has expectations for himself. I think game 7 was really important for him. I think I picked him to win World Series MVP. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to go off. Now, Jordan, are you aware who he is currently dating?
No, I'm not, actually. Please, tell me more.
Corbin Carroll is dating 2022 Miss America.
Really? I had no idea. I had no idea.
Neither did a number of the Diamondbacks beat writers who I revealed this information to yesterday.
Okay. I mean, are you the only person that knows this? Is Corbin Carroll the only person, or are you the only person that Corbin Carroll has told about this?
Well, I just am good at my job and, you know, figured this out. Sure. But it's not as if, you know, with all due respect to all the other wives and girlfriends out there, like, 2022 Miss America, like, she's coming off a W. All right. That's true. This is a very notable person to be dating.
Yeah.
She's the first ever Miss America winner from Alaska.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So does Alaska count as Pacific Northwest? I don't know. I guess Alaska is just Alaska.
So I believe she attends Arizona State right now. And that is how I would imagine that is how they met. But I was trying to like figure out what are some notable other crossover interesting things about Corbin Carroll. And it was like, oh, like, let's learn a little bit about a significant other. Oh, she's Miss America.
I think that's an all-time example of, oh yeah, no, he's just good at everything. Duh. The other thing though, strictly from a baseball standpoint, and like what I wrote about for Carroll for Fox today, is just like, you got to cherish these moments, man. What I felt bad bringing this up because it's kind of bleak, but I'm just going to say it here because I think it's a totally reasonable observation. Jake, the last time we saw Mike Trout in October, he was Corbin Carroll's age. Okay.
Yep.
We don't know that Corbin Carroll will ever be in this position ever again. And so he's going to, of course, do his part. And I certainly have more faith in the Diamondbacks than the Angels. And I would have said that at the time. And I would have said that now. That's fine. But again, like, it's just not a guarantee that you get to have this opportunity ever again. And it's easy when we see these young players in the World Series, like, this is the beginning of this incredible career where we're always going to talk about this guy and we're always going to see. It's like, maybe, I hope so, right? I felt the same way about, you know, Juan Soto, and then it took him getting traded to the Padres in miraculous fashion to get him back into the postseason. Like, there's so many ways that we just don't know how it's going to go. You have to cherish these moments in the postseason. I think he recognizes that.
I think about Dan Marino.
Oh, you do? Okay. Why is that?
Because Dan Marino made the Super Bowl in his second season and then never made it again.
Yeah. I can't say I remember that. But that is another good comp.
Right.
Still considered one of the greats of all time. And Corbin Carroll can still do that, just as Mike Trout has been. Right. But again, like, we know how much more weight it kind of carries when you get to do it in this point. And so that's what is maybe the difference. If he can kind of complete this, it really puts him in a different light, which is very exciting.
Jordan, let's take a quick break, and when we return, we'll read a couple mailbag questions and thoughts, chat about Madison Bumgarner and Nick Ahmed, and theorize who's going to throw out the first pitch for both of these teams. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball barbercast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying, because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's talk about the Mad Dog and the Mad Bum.
Let's do it. We have received some emails about the 2023 World Series. And we received one from Zach. And Zach is emailing us about Madison Bumgarner. Zach says, by the way, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Zach says, hi, Jake and Jordan. Long-time listener, Twitter, or first-time caller. As I sit here at 1 a.m. after the Diamondbacks shocked the Phillies in LCS Game 7, I cannot help but ponder Madison Bumgarner sitting at home watching the team that he started the season with get set to face off against this former manager in the World Series. Mad Bum opened the year as the D-backs number three starter. It was absolutely terrible. He only had four games and allowed 20 runs in 16 innings before Torey bullpen game Lovello said, see ya. Let's say he was magically not DFA'd, but had about the same stat line and was 100% healthy and on the Diamondbacks postseason roster. Well, if he had the same stat line, I don't think he would carry a 10 ERA all the way through the season. But anyway, additionally, Torey Lovello has been abducted by aliens and you are tasked with managing the D-backs in the World Series. Does Madison Bumgarner make an appearance for your team? Does he start? Do you attempt to capture the magic of playoff Mad Bum? So I think, thank you, Zach, for the email. I think what is interesting about this premise, like, is there a version, there's a version of the Madison Bumgarner season where he does make it through, I think. Even if he's not great, there's one where he's not so catastrophic that he does manage to stick on the roster. Maybe he gets hurt and then actually helps his chances to, like, come back at the end and be a part of the team. But the part that's hard to envision is him being like, yeah, I'll just be like the long reliever. That's the part that is very difficult to, like, get my mind around, is him being like, I'll do whatever. Like, maybe he would have. But would they have rather have Madison Bumgarner, even of the last few years, not the disastrous version of this, than have a bullpen game? I think probably not. I think almost certainly not.
So I think you got to give him like an inning early.
Where do you, like,
like early on, you just let him get an inning. And if it looks like 2014, you give him another inning. And then if it keeps looking good, you give him another inning. And then who knows, maybe you got a three starter.
The way I see it is like, I mean, maybe you just use him for that Seager Carter. We know Carter struggles against lefties. You know, maybe that's where you deploy him. I would imagine that Corey Seager saw a good amount of Madison. I'm actually going to look this up now. What do you think Corey Seager did against Madison Bumgarner's career? Because again, there is an opportunity here with a matchup with the Carter Seager back to back, where it's like, you know what, this actually might make some sense. I'm looking up his all time numbers against Madison Bumgarner, because otherwise we can't be doing this. And I don't know if, like, people, I also don't know the degree to which, like, Diamondbacks fans, I imagine for a while, like, it was not funny how bad Madison Bumgarner was, right?
Now
it's like, ha ha, oh, he was on our team and now we're in the World Series, like, whatever. I imagine that's not the general sentiment, or wasn't for a long time.
Yeah, and also he's certainly not fitting with the vibe.
No. Corey Seager against Madison Bumgarner in 30 plate appearances, hit .276, .300, .414. So, you know, .714 OPS, fine. I mean, that's worse than normal Corey Seager. So I don't hate that matchup. I think that's totally reasonable. Again, though, I think the real question is, here's maybe the better question about Madison Bumgarner before we move on. Who's he rooting for? Like, he doesn't owe anything to the Diamondbacks at this point. I mean, they certainly gave him a lot of money, and that was some level of trust in them. But, like, you have to imagine his loyalty to Bruce Bochy is larger than it is to the Diamondbacks.
I think so. That would be my guess. That would be my guess. Thing.
Now, Madison Bumgarner will not be pitching. But we were also wondering about first pitchers. Now, Jake, they have already announced the first pitches for the Rangers for the first two games of the series. You have not seen them yet. Do you have any guesses?
No.
George Bush, obviously. Come on. George W. Bush will be throwing out the first pitch. Pudge will be catching it tonight in game one. Okay.
Can you imagine if Pudge just, like, caught George Bush's first pitch and then popped up and threw to second?
And then game two will be Adrian Beltre throwing it out to Fergie Jenkins. Now, this is interesting to me because I was like, okay, well, what's the easiest way to think about who throws the first pitch? You just, you know, as we've seen here, you get some of the greatest players in franchise history. And I was curious when I pulled up the Rangers, you know, page on BREF, I was like, oh, who are their all-time war leaders, right?
Beltre.
And Beltre's third, and Pudge is first. Do you know who is second? Because he will not be throwing out a first pitch.
Not Michael Young.
No, Michael Young is much farther.
Juan
Young
Gonzalez.
It's not Juan Gonzalez. No.
Is it Alex Rodriguez? Ninth.
Elvis Andrews is 11th. No.
Alex Rodriguez.
Alex Rodriguez is 14th. That's with three seasons.
Who is it?
Rafael Palmeiro, who I don't know what his relationship with the organization is, but that's one that is at least mildly interesting. Maybe we'd see him for a game seven.
No Josh Hamilton?
No Josh Hamilton. I would bet heavily against that one.
Here's my thought. I think that teams, for the first pitch, need to do more bits. And you need to understand what your goal is. You're trying to get the crowd riled up in a negative or a positive way. So if I'm the Diamondbacks, I'm having Mad Bum throw out the first pitch to Mad Dog, and the crowd's just booing. You're just going nuts.
Yeah, but it's getting the crowd amped, right? Even if it's sort of a negative. It's more, it's like that the Mad Dog, Mad Bum combo is the ultimate like spite. Like, we did this in your face, basically. Yes.
Rangers, give me Deion Sanders.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Okay. Give me T.O. Give me Terrell Owens.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay.
I just want people who elicit strong emotions in the region. Full stop. That's it. That's all I'm looking for. Sure. I want passion in any direction.
So the Diamondbacks are an interesting one because obviously it's a much shorter history. And in terms of, you know, I look at their all-time war lead, it's like, okay, Randy Johnson. Paul Goldschmidt, don't think he's going to go through the first pitch. Brandon Webb, I would not be stymied. He's also on the broadcast. Like, is that Luis Gonzalez feels like a layup. I would imagine that's going to happen. Curt Schilling, imagine not getting the invite would be my guess. And then, you know, who's sixth? Ketel Marte. So like, again, we're talking about a pretty, and then seventh is AJ Pollock. So it's like a very short, you know, list, short history. So I'm excited. You know, you could do like Tony Womack, right? Like there's
Bob Brenly.
Yeah, I get. Well, he's the broadcaster, right? So there's versions that we could do.
Why can't we have Torrey do it?
I mean,
get
again,
the active manager to do it.
If you want to fire up the crowd, and then the other one that comes to mind is Nick Ahmed, right? Nick Ahmed, who was the longest tenured D-back coming into the year, had been with them for 10 seasons before being DFA during the season because the 53 OPS plus finally wasn't cutting it for a team that wanted to win. But Nick Ahmed, man, like he's the guy. Like, I don't know if he's didn't end up on another team this year. Like, does he? That would be kind of cool, but it's also kind of like you're almost forcing him into retirement by having him throw out the first pitch, and he might not be ready for that. He's 33, so that seems a little disrespectful.
What about? Oh, I just had a brain fart. What about Durant?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know what the current Sun schedule is, but I imagine that would get some people fired up.
What about Baxter, the mascot?
A lot of Baxter discourse.
How much would you have to pay? Here's one. What gets Diamondbacks fans riled up? The Dodgers. What if you got Clayton Kershaw to do it?
How much would you have to pay Clayton Kershaw to do that? I mean, come on.
50 mil, probably.
More than whatever he's getting next year. So that
can you imagine if he was like throwing out the first pitch? The Dodgers game one starter who enabled this run.
Oh, man.
Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, no. I can't. We can't do that. Anyway, let's spin this forward to one. Oh, you have another first pitch thought?
Well, we have an incredible email I would like to note. Ready? Well,
let's do it.
This is from Levi. Levi says, hello, Jake and Jordan. I would love to have your speculation on what we need to happen for Jose Herrera to win the World Series MVP, as one voter predicted in the MLB.com poll. Jose Herrera is the backup catcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He does not play. Like, he just does
he
not
hasn't
play.
Appeared yet, right? He has not appeared once in this postseason because Gavin Moreno has been such a star. And, you know, even with the kind of few injury scares to Gavin Moreno, we have not seen Jose Herrera appear in the postseason. No, he did play in 41 games. During the regular season. He has appeared in the forgive me. He did not appear in the NLCS, but he did receive four plate appearances. That is kind of shocking. Although I guess probably in the blowouts they wanted to get Moreno off his feet. What would have to happen? So he got a vote. You're showing me he got a vote. A lot of players getting at least one vote. So what let's construct the narrative. So unfortunately, like, this legitimately requires Moreno to get injured, right? So that's the first thing. So I hate that. So I'm already not enjoying this premise. But let's get real wacky. All right, let's say Moreno doesn't get injured. How the hell does this happen? I think it's probably multiple extra innings walk-off hits. I think that's or extra innings like go ahead hits, where he just comes off the bench. Lavella's emptied the bench. We want to bring in a lefty against Josh Sport, or no, not Josh Sport. It's the extras. So like we want to bring in a lefty to face, I don't even know who, what right-hander you'd be bringing at this point, or someone in the late, and he wins it. And somehow the rest of the series is so, that's why it would take multiple. It would take multiple game-winning hits, I think.
Yeah. It would be more of a quality than a quantity situation.
Like he's 2-for-2 with two walk-off hits or two game-winning RBIs. That's, yeah, I think, his best chance that doesn't involve a Moreno injury.
So let's talk about this now, Jordan. Let's pick our World Series MVPs. Let's make our predictions. Where are you at?
I am riding with the Snakes. I wanted to pick them in the CS. Didn't have stones to do it. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm just going to pick them. I'm going Snakes in 7. I think they pull it off. I think it's going to be messy. I think there's going to be all kinds of stuff we're not predicting. I am a little, there's definitely a part of me that's like, oh, this Rangers offense is just impossible. They're just going to bludgeon them. There's just going to be a total runaway show. But then I think about what happened in game 2 in the NLCS, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe they can survive one of those games. So that's why I'm just riding with the Snakes. This is as strong of a team of destiny feeling I've seen in quite some time.
Snakes in 5. I've been bit. Okay, my leg has been chomped. I think the Snakes split here and they don't lose at Chase. I think Arizona has a big advantage in games 3 and 4.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
As they proved in the last round, they won game 3 with Brandon Pfaadt. They won game 4 with the bullpen carousel. They needed a little help from Craig Kimbrel, I'm aware, but it's not as if the Rangers have, you know, peak Lee Smith back there or anything. Whereas the Rangers in games 3 and 4 have a rickety Max Scherzer and the Heen Dog Dane Dunning combo, which got blasted in the ALCS against Houston. And so I think if they take those two games, Zach Gallen in game 5 with a chance to do the thing, I think they take it in 5. That's my prediction.
Wow. Carroll, the Rangers have been Corbin the Carroll, most dominant team. So, wouldn't be shocking.
Corbin Carroll, World Series MVP. Yep. I think he's just going to get hot and keep it going.
Not Jose Herrera.
Just be famous. Okay. He's second for me.
Okay. Okay. And then if the D-backs win, Evan Longoria winning a World Series would be ridiculously cool. Every World Series has at least a handful of late 30s veterans who have never won. For Longoria to go 15 years between World Series appearances, which is the longest a hitter has ever gone. I think he's the fourth player ever, but the first hitter. 15 years between World Series appearances. And that is really cool. And if he can do it, I know he hasn't. And if he can even have one moment, one RBI single, right? He has not been good. He knows it. He was joking in the champagne celebration.
He's like, I didn't do anything.
He's like, I didn't do anything, right? But ultimately, he is still playing an important role, as we all know. And to see him, another guy who's had just a wild career like Tommy Pham, we talked about him a little bit more in the last episode, to see them win would be really special. But as we always say with these World Series, just starting to envision these guys lifting the trophy is really, really, really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. So we're going to cut it off here. As we've mentioned, like a lot of Pobo manager, GM news. I mean, again, there's probably 20 minutes we could go about Pierce Johnson, but we're just going to save it. There is a long offseason ahead of us, folks. And so we're going to keep the focus on the postseason here. We'll eventually catch up on all the manager stuff. Of course, Dusty deserves more discussion. There's all kinds of stuff, for sure. But we're keeping the focus on the postseason for now. We'll get to all that in due time. And I believe we'll be back tomorrow because we're going to keep this podcast rolling. Last thing, Jake, new merch available. Most Indeed. Notably, a very comfortable beanie. Barbacast beanie, now available podswag.com/baseball. We got new merch. We got bucket hats. We got beanies. We got new t-shirts designs we're really excited about. So go check those out if you want to support us and let us know. Show us your Barbacast merch. We appreciate it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you, Jake, for recording this with me. Thank you, Chris Tyler, as always, for producing. And we will be back on Saturday morning to recap game 1 of the World Series between, I'm sorry, am I seeing this right? The Arizona Diamondbacks?
Yeah, that's correct. And the Texas Rangers. The Rangers, okay. Yep.
All right, well, we'll talk about that. tomorrow. All right.
Goodbye.
Everyone enjoy.
SiriusXM Podcasts.